Welcome back to a new episode of Demand Gen Chat. I'm your host, Tara Robertson, head of Demand Gen here at Chili Piper. In this episode, I'm joined by Alex Rin, who leads global content and social strategy for LinkedIn Marketing Solutions. We chat about how LinkedIn's marketing team uses LinkedIn to grow and the trends they're seeing in B2B marketing from their own data at LinkedIn. Hope you enjoy my conversation with Alex. Alex, thank you so much for joining me on Demand Gen Chat.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me. Long time no talk.
Yeah, we connected. We were just saying before this, probably around 6 or 7 years ago when you were newer to LinkedIn.
No, it's pretty amazing. I was writing an ebook, which is so funny because I feel like we don't really do ebooks anymore. But I was writing this ebook around A Millennial's Guide to Marketing on LinkedIn. And you were one of the folks that I asked to contribute as a top millennial voice. So now no one cares about us anymore. It's all about Gen Z and we're just like the dinosaurs. But at the time it was a very hot topic.
Yeah, that was, I remember you reached out actually to my boss originally. It was Hannah at Uberflip, and she was kind of like, I don't know if I qualify as a millennial, but you definitely do. So you should tell. That was a great way to get connected. Yeah. I'd love to just jump into, I hear you have maybe a couple marketing hot takes for our audience that we can just use to get the conversation started.
Yeah. So one of the hot takes that I have, I'm not sure. I feel like most folks in the B2B realm are coming around to agree with it, but it's kind of debunking this concept that B2B is boring and that B2C can't be as creative. B2B can't be as creative as B2C. But we did a study recently at LinkedIn that found that around 82% of B2B marketing leaders think creative confidence is growing. And 81% say that they're seeing creative B2B campaigns that rival the best of what B2C has to offer. So I think, you know, B2B buyers want more innovative experiences and marketers are more equipped than ever to create them. And I think they're feeling more empowered to do so because there's a lot more education around why you need to invest in creativity and why you need a consistent brand voice over time. So really, I think that creativity is your best competitive differentiator, especially right now, because we might be facing, well, the economy is not great. We might be facing a recession. We're not really sure, but more folks within companies are kind of like reassessing what the products and services that they need to survive and those that are kind of like ancillary. And so if you can have that creative advantage, if you can put out really compelling thought leadership that's valuable, then that's one way that I think that you can make sure that you're still getting picked despite the fact that like budgets are being cut.
And are you seeing that? Do you have access to data that shows your team that creativity is paying off in terms of engagement metrics on LinkedIn, or do you have a different way of measuring that?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there are certain like ways that we measure what like a 5-star creative would look like. One is having an overarching story. One is including humor. Another tactic I've seen people do, like Salesforce, they have their little trailblazer like illustration. So that's, it's almost like having like a mascot like for your brand. Having like a song or like a jingle or something like that. Like there's a lot of different ways that you can incorporate it. But for our team, I think what we really try to do is just we've created this thing called the Collective, which is essentially our thought leadership franchise, our brand for LinkedIn, from LinkedIn Marketing. And it's a community for B2B marketers by B2B marketers. And within that community, we're asking, we're publishing, we're really taking like a spicy point of view on certain topics. One of them is around creativity in B2B. One is around reimagining what measurement looks like. One is around diversity, equity, inclusion, the changing role of the CMO. Like these are all things that we want to be known for. So we're doing original research and using our own first party data or partnering with someone like Edelman or Ipsos to find more that we can't just find on our platform around these specific topics and publishing that. We're also we're building a community in the sense that it's not just us telling folks on the platform like what we're seeing, but we're also being inclusive of a bunch of external industry voices and leaders as well. So we've had on Jill Kramer, CMO of Accenture, has contributed, EJ McNulty, who is actually a winner of the Creative B2B Lions, which we'll talk about CAN more because I have a lot that I'm excited about around CAN. But the idea is that it's like, it's our internal voices, it's external voices, and it's all research backed and insights fueled. And so like that for us is how we're seeing our creativity really pay off, because that specific showcase page that we just created last July already has like 15,000 followers, and the caliber of folks that are following are the exact people that we want to be reaching with these type of messages.
Yeah, I think it's tough because everyone's trying to build community right now, it feels like, but you guys have a built-in mechanism, obviously, to do that. And how do you foster those relationships with those influencers? Is that within your team or is that someone else's responsibility?
It's definitely a group effort. I mean, our team, when I first started in 2014, our marketing team was very small. We've gone gangbusters since then, and we have a bunch of different teams within the marketing team, within the marketing org, that are creating content, that have relationships with specific, like our agency team has specific relationships with agencies. OSO team might have more relationship with like SMBs and like startups. Our partner marketing team has a lot of clients that they work with that we partner on, like, for example, measurement solutions. So, and it's a mix of like that. And then our team has been around in the industries for a while. So we have like some friendlies. I've had some people proactively reach out to me and be like, hey, how can I contribute? So the way that we get contributors is kind of a mix of like all those different things. Or like our VP Jim will go to some industry event and someone's like, hey, I have a really interesting idea. Can we bring it to life? So the way that we source and foster these relationships is through, the different teams that we have, the agency, the enterprise strategic accounts teams that are doing really cool stuff with some of our larger accounts on the platform. So yeah, it's kind of a myriad of different ways, but most recently, now that things are kind of like opening up in the world again, we're introducing these like collective dinners where we invite some of the industry leaders. It might be associated with an event. So we just did one at the Adobe Summit where we bring together folks in real life to like to network and to discuss some of the topics that we think that might be top of mind for them. And those relationships end up sometimes translating into like articles on LinkedIn, or maybe they're live on one of our collective live episodes or like that type of thing.
Yeah, that's really cool. That's similar, actually. I've talked about this in a previous episode, but a lot of marketers are cutting down on that trade show budget this year just with things being tight. So dinners and more kind of exclusive invite-only events are definitely really prominent right now.
Yeah. And we don't want it to, we don't want the collective, it's a niche community, but it's not necessarily like exclusive. So we still want to make sure that like, you know, smaller agencies and smaller companies have a voice on it as well.
Mm, that's great. One other kind of, you hinted at the economy not being so great right now. So one thing that I know we've talked about internally, other marketers are talking about, is kind of swapping some of that brand spend out for more, call it lead gen, call it demand capture type campaigns. Have you seen that trend overall? And are there any things that marketers should look out for when making that switch with budgets?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a big no-no when you're cutting budgets to just like go automatically to cutting the more top of the funnel or brand focused, brand awareness focused content, and just like dumping all the money into lead gen, because the best program is a full funnel program, which is leveraging both of those like in partnership with each other. We say sometimes at LinkedIn that like when someone isn't ready necessarily to buy and you're like pushing them bottom of the funnel content, it's kind of like you go into a bar and like you ask like someone that you find attractive for like their social security number. Like that's just not an appropriate way to like build a relationship. So that's why it's so important. It can be quite off-putting, like to just be pushing all this product-focused stuff, especially during an economic downturn when morale is low and like whatnot, because it's like people are actually looking to you for more of like your thought leadership content during that time to make sure that that kind of exhibits that you know what you're talking about. And you're building credibility that way. And if, because, I mean, at the end of the day, like people buy from people, not companies. And that's why it's so important for your leaders to be showcasing their thought leadership. And in general, like your employees are your best advocates for consumers and for you, as an aside, for your talent brand. So recently we put out our study, our annual study in partnership with Edelman that we do every year around thought leadership. And this year was really interesting because as we're approaching what could potentially be a recession, we found that half of C-suite executives, so like 50% of CC execs, say that high quality leadership has more of an impact on their purchase decision making during an economic downturn than when times are good. So that just shows you like there's a void that needs to be filled when times are not good. And then also, I found this really interesting. So 61% of decision makers say that an organization's thought leadership can be moderately or a lot more effective at demonstrating the potential value of the products and services compared to a traditional product-oriented marketing. So I think that that kind of speaks for itself in the sense of like why you should continue to invest in brand and top of the funnel activities and not just switch to like all bottom of the funnel. There's nothing wrong with bottom of the funnel, but like, you know, you're building a relationship. It takes time to get there.
Yeah, I think you made a really good point too, that people, I mean, your buyers might be just more sensitive than usual to messages that seem off-putting or too direct, right?
Totally. People, and like people
are on edge about their jobs, about their team being smaller maybe than last year.
Yeah. And like to add to that point, I mean, we've all become like more emotional and compassionate in a post-pandemic world. And there's a misconception that, you know, B2B buying isn't an emotional process. Anytime you're buying, it's an emotional process. Like, you know, I think, you know, through if you're going to buy, if you're like, you know, buying a CRM or whatever, like that's going to affect your role. It's going to affect your job. It's going to affect, which affects your pay, which affects your quality of life. Like it's all intertwined. Mm-hmm. So you can't really say that that buying isn't emotional. And additionally, I feel like we're more primed towards emotional advertising in a post-pandemic world. And like another study that we found showed that it proved that emotion actually impacts lower funnel. And in fact, we found that top like emotion brands saw a higher, 44% higher average click-through rate compared with like the rest of companies on LinkedIn. So emotion isn't just like pulling at the heartstrings, or having an emotional campaign isn't just something that's for top of the funnel. You see it reflected and having a bigger impact when you look towards lower of the funnel metrics.
Yeah, it's funny. I think a lot of us think of those B2C, like just memorable emotional campaigns as kind of fluffy compared to more traditional demand gen tactics. But when you say things like 44% higher click-through rate, that really speaks to how important it can be.
I mean, there's a difference between fluff and top of the funnel content, right? Like it's like, I guess fluff would be, in my mind, top of the funnel content or thought leadership that is not high quality, because there is a lot of top of the funnel stuff. And, you know, everyone thinks they're a thought leader these days, but there's definitely a difference between investing in fluff or like consuming fluff versus what you feel is like well-researched, like point of view on something.
We were catching up earlier, and I know there's an event coming up that you're super excited about to be attending with LinkedIn. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So the Cannes Lions Festival of Creativity, it's in, I guess the right proper way to say it is Cannes. Cannes is in the south of France, and you might know it because every year that's where they have the International Film Festival as well that all the celebrities go to. But it's also where we host marketing's similar event, I guess, which is the Festival of Creativity. All the big agencies come out, big marketing companies come out, win awards. We actually hosted the first ever Creativity and B2B Award last year, which is also like why I'm on and on about creativity and B2B, because I just feel like things are changing. We have an award now at Cannes, and then this is our second year hosting the award. And we are going to have a big LinkedIn studio as well. I can't reveal where it's going to be quite yet, but it's one of the prime locations. We're very excited about it. And from the LinkedIn studio, I'm going to be hosting, well, not myself, but I'm programming the content for like 4 to 5 different LinkedIn live broadcasts from Cannes. So really excited to not only be there and host this award and host, you know, award parties and whatever, and the amazing networking and the amazing food, but also making the content a bit more accessible by being able to broadcast it from our showcase page to folks at home. So we are currently working on what we're calling right now, I guess I'll call it, is like our state of B2B marketing report. So if you follow our other business lines like Sales Solutions, every year they have their state of sales report that they put out, or like the Talent will put out workplace trends report or whatnot. And we haven't had our own report to own like that, that people can expect from us on an annual basis really until now. So this is the first of many to come, hopefully. But within that report, we've partnered with Ipsos on the research, and we're really trying to outline what the evolving role and influence of the B2B marketer looks like, in especially like given the current macro. So we are asking questions in the survey to marketers around the evolving role of the CMO. We're asking about measurement. We're asking about DE&I. We're asking about like the world of work and the future of remote work. What successful B2B brand building looks like. So the idea is that we're going to launch this report just in time for Cannes, and then we're going to host these specific live broadcasts on a bunch of our findings, inviting on industry leaders to chat with us about the findings as well. So very excited about that.
That's really cool. And it's a way to make the event, you have data-driven content that you're bringing to it. So it's not just, let's chat at...
Yeah, like
flashy event, right?
Chat. Yeah, I mean, hopefully all of our broadcasts are really based in research that we've done, or research that some of our partners have done. Last year, we hosted Ty Heath on our team hosted an amazing conversation about Juneteenth there at Cannes, and we had on Emily Gran from Omnicom and a bunch of other folks, and it was just such. It was probably one of my favorite conversations, really. And like, if you send out any communications after this, I can share a link out to it. But those type of conversations that are a little bit more like real about what the experience is of being a B2B marketer, and less like we were talking about earlier being fluffy. Like, I have no time for fluff. There's a lot of content to be consuming, and I want to be consuming things that are more real and are discussing things that are like that are actually top of mind for B2B marketers today.
Very cool. Well, getting to South of France is maybe a goal for some of the B2B marketers listening. Yeah. Maybe getting that award.
Yes.
How can marketers qualify for that award? Do you have details on that we can share afterwards? Might be too late for this year, but
I don't know if they're still accepting nominations, to be honest. But I mean, anyone can apply. Again, anyone can really apply. Last year, one of the jurors was Chris Duffy from Adobe, and he actually shared in a broadcast that we did with him kind of like the criteria that they were looking at to qualify. So I'd point people to watch that live. He can explain it much more eloquently than I can.
Great. Yeah, we'll find the link for that to share if anyone's interested. I know I am. Cool. So I'd love to shift gears a little bit and just talk more specifically about what your team, I know you're producing a ton of great content behind the scenes, and how do you measure success of either individual content pieces and then kind of a content program or campaign overall?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely depends on the format and like what the intention was behind the piece of content. We definitely believe in an objective-based advertising approach. So everything that we put out, depending on like what the objective was or what the format was, has kind of a different set of success metrics associated. But one thing that I wrote a piece about recently for The Collective was talking about customer lifetime value. So in the piece, I talked about how the CMO Council recently did a survey in partnership with Deloitte, and they found that only 17% of CMOs feel like they're tracking CLV effectively. And as a driver of an organization's marketing efforts, this is a huge oversight and could be costing marketing budget dollars and overall company revenue. So just like to level set, the way that I define customer lifetime value is it's a return on investment or ROI metric that offers insight into how much revenue an individual will or organization will contribute over the lifetime of their relationship to your business. So we calculate it of average customer lifespan times customer value, and that equals customer lifetime value. And digital marketing is already making use of machine learning and AI for customer segmentation and targeting. But by augmenting your segmentation with information derived by from calculating your customer lifetime value, you could actually target personas who are more likely to not only purchase once, but remain brand loyal for a long time. So if I kind of like zoom out and look at what the like broader goals are, customer lifetime value is definitely one of them. And as much as we can tie, you know, commercial value back to like the top of the funnel programs that my team does, for example, like LinkedIn Collective Live and that stuff, that's all great, because at the end of the day, what you're looking at is the relationship you built, the quality of the relationships, the revenue that's being generated as a result of the relationship. So that's like more at a high level. But if we're looking at a video, for example, like one of the lives we put on, we'll be looking at peak viewership, lifetime viewership. We're looking at who's watching, like from what companies, from what locations. You can look at what titles on LinkedIn as well. You can get like that granular to see who's tuning in. And then like there's things that are a little bit more like the quality of the comments and the questions that are coming in throughout the broadcast. That's the stuff that I really look at to see, yes, there were X, you know, yes, 5,000 people watched, but like, who were they, and were they engaged? Were they asking questions during the Q&A that were like super relevant? Because those are really important things to look at too. It's not always just about like the simple number of like eyeballs that potentially looked at your video for 2 minutes or more.
And for things like, say you're getting great comments, great questions from people who are in the target audience that you want to reach, do you have a way to kind of share that back with your executive team? Or is it something that you just kind of anecdotally, maybe you take a screenshot? That's what I do. I have just a folder of crazy screenshots that I'm not really sure what to do with. But is there something that your team has a way to kind of share those wins?
Yeah, I mean, we'll share back. I mean, the execs on our team are speaking on the shows now. Like Jim, our VP, hosted the show in November. So he was well aware of the questions that were coming in. But in general, yeah, when we're talking to them about how an episode did, we'll mention the quality of the questions and whatnot. And what we've started to do, we have at the end of our broadcast, at least, we try to save around 10 minutes at the end to answer those questions. And like myself and the social media team are kind of filtering out the questions that are most relevant, and they answer them in real time. But what I think we want to do also moving forward is taking all of those questions, and especially the ones that we didn't get to because we didn't have enough time, and turning it into a blog post. And then within that blog post, we can get more into detail with like research of like why, you know, why we're saying this piece is high quality content, like for example, or high quality thought leadership, like what are the specific like boxes that it's checking and whatnot. So, so yeah, I mean, that it's just a great way of sparking more content ideas, honestly, because people are asking questions that maybe we hadn't thought of, or maybe we thought that we had answered before, but it's not realistic that just we published about something once that everyone has seen it or everyone like truly understands it. If you really want to own a topic, you kind of have to like continue the drumbeat on it.
Yeah, I'm definitely guilty of saying, oh, we already wrote about that, or yeah, we've covered
this totally topic,
but like, oh, we already wrote not about- everyone is reading everything you put out.
That's yeah, really and one thing that we've been finding really effective recently on our LinkedIn ads blog is that rather than creating net new comment or net new content, we are going back and updating old top performing posts mm-hmm. and republishing them because they already have the high traffic. They already have the SEO value. We're just like adding more up-to-date content, maybe adding new stats or maybe adding like an embedded infographic and like republishing it. And that has proven really successful for us. And it's like, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Like just kind of like reinvest in it.
Yeah. And that's a great way to use those questions. Like you were saying, if someone asks something that you thought you answered in the blog post, maybe you need to be a little bit more specific and actionable.
Yeah.
With the way that you're helping.
Yeah.
Cool. I'd love to hear a little bit, if you can share, of just maybe some unique ways that LinkedIn's marketing team is using LinkedIn. I know you mentioned LinkedIn Lives. Is there a specific strategy you have to get attendance really going for Lives? I've been on a few lately where people are actually recording podcasts while doing a LinkedIn Live, which I thought was a really interesting strategy because obviously they're getting the content, but any other unique things that your team is trying?
Yeah, I feel like I need to do like a LinkedIn learning course on how our team does lives because I forget how much work goes into it. And then someone asks me and I'm like, well, there's all this stuff beforehand and then there's during, and then there's all this stuff like post that happens. But in like what you're talking about podcasts, now you can also do live audio on LinkedIn as well, which is something we haven't experimented on my team with yet. But in terms of the LinkedIn Lives, we are very fortunate at LinkedIn that we have our own in-house media production team. So the stuff that you see in our studios, again, very fortunate to have these like beautiful studios with these beautiful sets. Those are all produced by our media productions team. So it looks like looks like a set. It looks, when you walk in, it looks like you're on Jimmy Fallon or something. It's very professionally done. They're amazing. So I will say we have them, which helps a lot. We really think it adds to the production value because during COVID, there was just so many talking heads and people talking to you from their home offices. And I think people are just over that. Like people want to see people want to see other humans in a room together, physically interacting. I guess to go back to like what we do beforehand, I mean, there's a whole like, you know, the topic selection, the speaker selection, then it's creating the LinkedIn event itself, inviting everyone. We also use our own products. So we'll use event ads and we'll use static sponsored content to drive attendance. Whoever says email is dead is, that's another maybe like potentially unpopular opinion / hot topic, but email is like, email's 100% not dead. Email is probably one of the ways that we drive the most new attendees to our live program. So you set the event live, you encourage your speakers to share about it, you start posting about it organically on your channels, you put paid behind it, you send out an email, not too many emails, just like one or two, the most, encouraging people to attend. You might want to do something like a meet the marketer type of series beforehand so that folks can learn a little bit more about the speakers that are actually going to be on the show. That's one way that we have kind of garnered more attention and excitement around it, and publishing posts that are related to the content you're going to be talking about on the live and having the CTA be like, you know, to learn more, go register for this event. Mm-hmm. And then I'm sure I'm forgetting like a million steps, but in general, and then you actually, beforehand, I will say we don't just go in there like blind. We typically work with our speakers to create a broadcast doc, which generally outlines the questions that our host is going to ask. And then they get a chance to like organize their thoughts beforehand. They don't have something they're speaking off of like during the broadcast, but it just helps with the flow and everything, because then we'll have a dry run where everyone gets on a content call and the speakers get more acquainted with each other in terms of like who's going to say what and who the host is going to volley what question to first, that kind of stuff. And then there's the actual live that happens. We have our social team moderating that as well. Like I said, picking questions that are most relevant for the host to answer. If we're having someone external on, we typically bring them a gift. So everyone loves LinkedIn swag. Everyone loves swag, period. So typically it's like a hoodie or like North Face has a LinkedIn on it. And then from there, like you're really building, you're really nurturing a relationship with the people you had on the show. So we'll offer them to do an article on the LinkedIn Collective, which double clicks into like a specific point they made potentially on the show. We also, our media productions team sends us the transcript and we identify like 3 to 5 different 30-second to a minute max clips. And then we share those out on social, again, driving people to watch the entire on-demand video. And then we also change the LinkedIn on LinkedIn. We change the sponsored content. There's so many internal acronyms. We change the sponsored content to from the wording of like, you know, registered to attend and instead be like, you know, watch this video so that we're still driving views to the on-demand via paid after the show has launched. So there's a lot of different steps. You don't have to make it as complicated as I probably overcomplicated it in my own head, but we just have like really high standards of how we want the shows to be produced and like the guest experience and all of that. So we think about it a lot.
And you mentioned reusing that content after the fact. Are you typically leaving those just ungated on LinkedIn, or do people have to register to see the full
video? We leave it ungated. We typically, or my team's like philosophy overall generally is that top of the funnel content shouldn't be gated. And it goes back to what I was saying before of like, you know, someone who might be interested in your product or service is going to consume 5 to 7 pieces of content before they're ready to put their hand up to sales and say like, hey, I want to talk to you and like take this relationship one step further type of thing. So when it's top of the funnel, we don't really feel like gating is the best way because most likely people that are consuming that content are not ready in their journey to be, to have someone from sales reach out. That's also not the objective of the content. Like it's not like let's gather all these dames so that we can nurture them to a sale. We're still building the relationship with the top of the funnel stuff. So in general, if it's top of the funnel, we don't gate it.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. And like you said, if you know that it takes 6 or 7 pieces of content to move them past the line, if you gate it, you're losing one of those touch points potentially, right?
Exactly.
So it's slowing down.
And it's like, I think I saw some report a couple of years ago that said that almost half of the information that's inputted into those forms is like falsified anyway. So I think that's a result of people gating everything. People gating too soon in the relationship because people are like, I'm not ready for you to be calling me, you know?
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. You mentioned that you do paid placements for driving event attendance. Does your team experiment with any other paid formats on LinkedIn? I'm curious what's working right now, maybe something new.
We use all of our own products. I mean, paid and organic. So one of the organic products that we've most recently been experimenting with are newsletters. And we set our newsletter live for the LinkedIn ads showcase page. And I think it was like crazy how fast we got to 1 million newsletter subscribers. So like newsletters are like the it thing now in terms of organic for sure. For paid, we use all of our own stuff. We drink our own champagne. So carousel ads, video ads, event ads, static ads. I'm trying to think of something that might be like newer. Something that's really cool that's not like available to the public yet, but it's coming are thought leader ads. So really excited about that, especially given like all the research we've done over the years around thought leadership. So like, you know, moving forward, it's like LinkedIn ads could do a thought leader ad that's associated with me, for example. So very excited for that to be launched.
And those would be literally published from your page, so not from a company page, right?
Yeah.
Very cool. Yeah, I'm excited to get my hands on that. I think I'm on a list somewhere to try it early. Yeah, we're really big proponents of thought leadership here. So excited to try that out. I'd love to hear a little bit, just speaking of kind of yourself putting out content, your team, does LinkedIn encourage everyone who works there to kind of create their own content and create a following for themselves? Is that something that's built into the culture? Just from the outside in, I kind of imagine that it would be, but I'm curious.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of a culture thing. It's definitely not like something that's required of you by any means. But I think just in general, like maybe it's just within the nature of the people that LinkedIn hires where they want to build their own personal brand and they like have that drive. And plus it's like when you work at LinkedIn, there's just so many amazing resources. We're constantly learning and there's always opportunities to like, you know, hear from different like speakers and authors and LinkedIn learning courses and et cetera. So I feel like a lot of us just feel compelled to like share the goodness of like all the information that we're consuming. But I think it's definitely, it's a personal decision and choice to like put yourself out there in that way. Mm-hmm. But I think it's a smart one because you're not going to be at your company forever, right? Like, and eventually when you leave, you're taking your personal brand with you, you know? None of that like is left. I mean, the blog post will live on, et cetera, but like when you're building your own personal brand, kind of associate with their company, but not really. When you move on, you get to obviously like take all of that with you.
Yeah, I think especially now when there's so much uncertainty, it's not a bad thing to build up your own personal brand just in case.
Yeah.
Is there anything specific that LinkedIn does to just make that really easy for people if they are interested in growing a personal brand?
I honestly can't think of anything like off the top of my head. But there's opportunities for like, I mean, there's like workshops and stuff like that and opportunities to we call it, or it's called Own the Room training. So that's like kind of like speaking, public speaking training. So there's definitely a lot of opportunities to do that. But no, we don't have like a formal like process in place of like what it looks like to build your personal brand on LinkedIn or like what becoming a creator looks like.
So looking ahead, kind of maybe could be something this year. I know we've already talked about cons and a couple other things, but what are you looking forward to as you grow the marketing team? Is there maybe a new tool you're excited about or a new format on LinkedIn?
Yeah, I mean, con is definitely a top of mind at the moment. I'm excited about this data B2B marketing report we're putting out because it's going to be, like I said, the first of many that the B2B marketing industry can expect from us. I'm excited about how our team is expanding. I mean, I'm bringing on two senior producers in the beginning of April to help us out with our video strategy. So it's like all the stuff that we're doing for Collective Live, we also want to do it for LinkedIn Ads Live as well. But like the nature of that program will be a little bit more like tactical, less thought leadership-y. But I think we're only just getting started with our video strategy and like given the ample resources that we have with our media production team and all of these like beautiful studios to shoot from. I think we're only getting started with not only showcasing like our internal thought leaders, but getting more diverse voices across our channels in video format. So yeah, I think the ways that we've been experimenting with video and like trying to like up level our own the production of our videos is something that's top of mind aside from France, which I just can't stop thinking about, honestly.
It's hard to beat that. Yeah. Yeah, that's a fun trip to shop for. great. So let's move on to our quick fire round. Just have three quick questions to round things off. Is there another marketer you follow that our listeners should go check out? I'm guessing on LinkedIn, but could be elsewhere.
Yeah, so Bozema St. John, who was in the C-suite at like Apple, Netflix. She worked at Uber. She worked at Pepsi. She recently published a book called The Urgent Life. And not only is she just like wicked smart in her own right in terms of the things that she's accomplished professionally. But the book, I bought it thinking like, oh, maybe it'll be a mix of like tips from her in her corporate life, and then also talking about like the extreme loss that she's endured in her life and like how she overcame it. The book is like mostly a memoir about her personal life. She doesn't really talk. I mean, she talks about her jobs, but it's, and I just feel like we could all take a tip from her in that way, in the sense that like when you're going through something, it's really not easy to compartmentalize it. And a lot of companies talk about bringing your entire self to work, but like she really lives it. And she is just an inspiration. We had her at LinkedIn recently to talk about her book and just in general her experience. And she's a force to be reckoned with, man. Being in the same room with her is humbling. She's an incredible woman. So I would recommend following her on LinkedIn, buying her book. If you ever have an opportunity to see her, if she's signing books, I highly recommend going.
That's a great one. I've seen a couple of her talks, I want to say on YouTube. I don't know where I saw them. But she's such a strong speaker. So I'm really curious to learn more. I don't know much about her personal life. So now I'm curious to hear more.
Yeah.
Is there an under the radar, could be a channel or maybe a tactic that your team is loving right now or experimenting with?
I already mentioned thought leader ads, which we're really excited about. I think we're just, we're maybe taking it back to like old school tactics of building real relationships IRL, but like that's probably the thing I'm most excited about, because we've all been living in our little bubbles for the last couple of years because of COVID. And now it's like, we're emerging, we're filming in studio, we're hosting these like collective dinners with CMOs and CEOs and having real conversations. And that's probably, it's not like an under the radar tactic, but it's like a tactic that maybe we've all forgotten because everything is so digitized now, is that there's no replacement for like IRL interactions and relationship building when it comes to business or any relationship for that matter. So that's probably what I'm most excited about.
Cool. And lastly, where can we go to find out more about you or follow your update?
Me? You can follow me on LinkedIn. I publish regularly on the LinkedIn Collective Showcase page, as well as the LinkedIn Ads blog, which has its own LinkedIn Ads Showcase page. Not really active on Twitter, I gotta be honest. That's another story for another episode. But you can follow me on LinkedIn.
Great. Yeah, a lot of our listeners run LinkedIn ads, so I'm sure they'll get a ton of value out of following you, Alex. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me. Great seeing you again.
You too. And thanks everybody for listening. We'll be back in about 2 weeks with a brand new episode.
Thanks for listening to Demand Gen Chat. Demand Gen Chat is a Chili Piper podcast hosted by Tara Robertson and produced by me, Nola McCoy. If you're enjoying the podcast, please leave us a 5-star rating on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. It only takes 5 seconds and helps other marketers like you discover Demand Gen Chat. Also, if you'd like to have a question answered in a future episode, you can connect with Tara Robertson on LinkedIn. Send her a DM with your question and it could be answered on a future episode. Finally, if you've gotten this far and are wondering what Chili Piper even is, Chili Piper helps B2B marketers book more qualified meetings for their sales teams. You can't afford to leave opportunities on the table. So let your lead self-qualify and schedule a time with the right rep instantly. And that's just one of the many revenue-impacting things that Chili Piper does. Visit chilipiper.com to learn more. And thanks again for listening. We'll see you on the next episode of Demand Gen Chat.